During the Second Temple period, there was an institution in Jerusalem known as the Sanhedrin. It is mentioned by Josephus, it's mentioned in the New Testament, it's mentioned by the rabbis. Subsequent rabbinic sources imagined an ideal reality whereby, as in biblical fashion, or as in biblical imagination, all matters of legal or religious importance were decided there at the Sanhedrin. Historically, this does not seem to have been the case. The Sanhedrin itself was not a monolithic group. It had members possessing vastly different notions of what constituted Judaism. For instance, we know that on that body called the Sanhedrin, there were both Pharisees and Sadducees, who were diametrically opposed on a whole series of issues. Post-Temple Judaism is frequently projected as having established a more normative, right, or cohesive Jewish community and leadership. But even this has to be qualified. Rabbinic legal literature from this period, for instance the Mishnah, is noteworthy for retaining varying opinions on almost every aspect of Jewish law and religion. For instance, you may remember in that very first lecture we alluded to two rabbis, Hillel and Shammai, who lived even prior to the destruction of the Second Temple. Those two rabbis actually produced schools of students, the House of Hillel, the House of Shammai. In Hebrew, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Those two schools alone had over 300 disputes between them on matters of law. And yet, both of them found their way into the Mishnah. So clearly there's no one monolithic rabbinic group. In fact, I must be honest that the rabbis actually tell the story that it came to blows sometimes, and actual physical action was taken between these various schools, so much so that in the post-temple period, a voice came out of the heavens saying that the halakha is according to Beit Hillel. And in light of our previous lecture, that causes all sorts of problems. Suddenly there is revelation, suddenly there is a voice out of the heavens, and this is not a simple issue, and it raised all sorts of problems for interpreters of the story. But clearly there were debates. In fact, the Mishnah actually justifies preserving minority opinions, even though they were not kept at the time. Why? So that these opinions might be used by subsequent courts. In other words, to imagine a central Judaism, a normative Judaism that excludes other opinions would be mistaken. This Judaism was far from monolithic. And throughout the Talmud itself are endless disagreements between, for instance, the rabbis of Palestine and the rabbis of Babylonia, or between the rabbis within each of these two communities. And the Talmud never really considered this reality all that harmful. It was accepted that each community lived in accordance with its own customs and its own legal decisions. There was probably one exceptional period. In the post-Talmudic period, again, somewhere in the 9th century and 10th century, what we refer to as the Gaonic period, named after the Gaonim, the heads of the academies in rabbinic Babylonia, there we do encounter attempts by the rabbinic establishment of Babylonia, which had now emerged beyond any doubt as the central Jewish community throughout the world, and by the way, had the good fortune of being in the center of the Arab Muslim world as well, because the academies had moved to Baghdad, and Baghdad now was the center of the Islamic Caliphate as well. And so here we found the rabbinic centers of power literally in the world center of power. There we do find attempts by the rabbinic establishment at asserting its control over the vast majority of communities throughout the Jewish diaspora. And they did this in a very interesting way, by negating the legitimacy and the authenticity of Palestinian rabbinic tradition. We actually found in the Cairo Geniza, you remember that repository of hundreds of years of texts that somehow wound up, lest they fall into disuse, they were placed in that synagogue in Cairo. And sure enough, we found in that Geniza letters that were written by rabbis and their disciples in Babylonia in the 9th century. one fellow in particular, his name is Pirkoi ben Baboy, who writes letters to the Jewish diaspora saying, you must follow us.